Good morning. Today our study is going to begin in Judges 7:24, and I know there's nothing up there so far. First, in our last two classes, we saw in Judges 6:1 that the Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. We learned that the Midianites and Amalekites would come north every year and ravage the land like a plague of locusts. When the Israelites finally cried to God, God sent an angel to Gideon, who would be the next judge of Israel. Gideon protests that he's not capable. He's of the smallest family of his tribe and so on. The Lord says in the 6th chapter, verse 16, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat Midian as one man. Gideon needs more proof. The Lord sends an angel. When Gideon prepares a sacrifice, the angel touches it with his rod, and it's burnt. Same night, he was instructed to tear down his father's altar to Baal and Asherah beside it, and took 10 men and did that. And when the men of the city wanted to kill Gideon, his father wisely says that he won't turn Gideon over. In verse 31, says, if Baal is a god, let him take care of himself. Still, Gideon needs more proof. And we see two signs involving fleece being wet or dry. We then get into chapter 7, and Gideon assembles a force of 32,000 men. And in verse 2, God says it's too many men to defeat the Midianites, because if you use 32,000 men, all the Israelites will think that it's because of their own power that they were able to win against 135,000 men. So using a thought process from back in Deuteronomy, 22,000 men were afraid, so they were sent away. That left 9,700, and using a water test that we studied about, that left 10,000, and using a water test, 9,700 were excluded from those who would attack the Midianites, bringing us down to 300 men to go up against 135,000 Midianites. And it should be obvious with that many men, it would be a challenge for 300 to win against that many unless God was on their side. To begin today, we're going to begin in verse 24, but to set the stage, let's read from verse 19. There we go. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers that were in their hands. And when the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, they held the torches in their left hand and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and cried, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. Each stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran, crying out as they fled. When they blew 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole army. So the Midianites were fighting each other. And the army fled as far as these two long names, as far as the edge of the next two names. And the men of Israel were summoned from Naphtali and Asher and all Manasseh, and they pursued Midian. So now we come to the slide that we've seen more than once. We begin our activity in the north at the Valley of Jezreel, and we're going to see the Midianites flee south through the Jordan Valley and then go toward the east. So in verse 24, we read, Gideon sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down against Midian and take the waters before them as far as Bethbara and Jordan. So all the men of Ephraim were summoned, and they took the waters as far as Bethbaron and Jordan. They captured the two leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeb, and they killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and they killed Zeb at the winepress of Zeb while they pursued Midian. And they brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon from across the Jordan. So the Israelites cry out to God. God sends them Gideon. Gideon falters, but his courage is built up. With 300 men, he attacks the Midianites. They're very successful, and so successful that the Midianites flee. And he asks the Ephraimites, and this story, the break in chapter 7 and 8 is unfortunate. We're going to go immediately into 8. The Midianites flee, and the Ephraimites, who weren't asked to be part of the party to begin with at the battle, are now invited. And Gideon sends messengers to the Ephraimites who had not been part of the campaign, asking them to seize the water crossings of the Jordan River to help to prevent the Midianites from escaping. And there in verse 25, we see that not only did they answer when they were summoned, they captured the two Midianite leaders, Zeb and Oreb, and they killed them. And they brought evidence of what they had done to Gideon. They brought the heads of these two men to Gideon. Now, the story is going to continue immediately in chapter 8, but anything you want to say on the balance of chapter 7? Cross our fingers. With chapter 7 flowing immediately into chapter 8, here is our brief review of the area. There's Ophrah in the north, the general site of where the battle was. The slide that reminds us that this terrain wasn't flat, so leaving, the Midianites leaving and going south and east would present some challenges. Our slide we just saw to see the path. And then we're going to hear in a few verses about Succoth and Peniel. That gives you some general ideal of where they are. And then it says they're going to go to Karkor, K-A-R-K-O-R. And the yellow arrow points to the route that might lead in that direction. So we've just looked at 24 through the end of the 7th chapter. So in the 8th chapter, now the Ephraimites ask Gideon, "Why have you treated us like this? Why didn't you call us when you went to fight Midian?" And they challenged him vigorously. But he answered them, "What have I accomplished compared to you? Aren't the gleanings of Ephraim's grapes better than the full grape harvest of Abiezer? God gave Oreb and Zeb, the Midianite leaders, into your hands. What was I able to do compared to you?" At this, their resentment subsided. So as we look at this, now in chapter 8, the Ephraimites are angry because they had not been included in the original battle. Maybe they're upset because their ego was hurt. Maybe they thought we weren't good enough to come fight with you. Or maybe they were upset because, you know, when you defeat an enemy, normally the spoils left by the enemy can be taken by the conquerors, and maybe they wanted the spoils. We just don't know, but they were mad, and that's the point. And Gideon has to deal with their criticism very quickly if as a leader, he is going to continue to be effectively. And he did so diplomatically, because there in verse 2 and 3, Gideon uses a grape analogy to say he agreed that he and his troops had struck the first blow against the Midianites. However, he smoothed their ruffled feathers by praising them for capturing two of the Midianite leaders, Oreb and Zeb. Gideon says his efforts weren't near as important as what the Ephraimites did. Sure, Gideon's men were reaping the harvest, but in this case, the later efforts of the Ephraimites, what he calls the gleaning of the grapes, was far more important because of the results that the Ephraimites achieved. Again, Gideon says capturing and executing the Midianite leaders was the more important action. And then in verse 3, Gideon finishes appeasing the Ephraimites by saying it was truly that God who gave the victory. Verse 3 says, God has given the leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeb, into your hands. As a result, the wrath of the Ephraimite men is turned aside. What would you like to say through verse 3? In verse 4, then Gideon and the 300 men who were with him came to the Jordan and crossed over, weary yet pursuing. He said to the men of Succoth, please give loaves of bread to the people who are following me, for they are weary, and I am pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. The leaders of Succoth said, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hands that we should give bread to your army? Gideon said, all right, when the Lord has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, then I will thrash your bodies with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. Gideon and his 300 men are in pursuit of the Midianites deep into the Transjordan, that is, the area east of the Jordan River, and maybe some of the Ephraimites have joined them in that, we're not told. When he asks the men of Succoth for supplies, for provisions, for loaves of bread for his troops, the men of Succoth refuse. Now, were they being cautious because they thought maybe the Midianites were going to beat Gideon down and come back and then punish Succoth because they had helped Gideon? Or, I don't know, or were they just choosing to be neutral at this point, to refuse help to Gideon and his men, but since Gideon had not captured these two kings and their men? You know, frankly, Succoth would suffer pretty severely if the Midianites came back and counterattacked. Whatever the reason that the men of Succoth refused to help their fellow Israelites, whether it was prudence or cowardice, they mocked Gideon, in essence, by saying, do you have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hands? Or do you have these two men already in your hands? And that wasn't very polite, was it? So, as a result of their comments and their failure to help fellow Israelites, Gideon promises in verse 7 to punish the men of Succoth by beating them with thorns of the wilderness and with briars after God allows him to capture Zeba and Zalmunna. Remember back in chapter 6 how Gideon acted? He was timid. He was hesitant. He was frightened of his own shadow. My words, not God's. What's Gideon like now? He's assertive. He's sure. And in verse 7, he knows that the Lord will make sure Gideon and his men are successful in capturing the two kings. So, the promise he makes to the men of Succoth, well, I'm happy I'm not from Succoth. Any comments through verse 1 through 7? Sir, wherever.
Didn't understand why or how he was going to do it in the beginning.
Okay, good comment. In verse 8, Succoth didn't help, and about 10 miles away, perhaps, is Peniel. He went up from there, leaving Succoth, to Peniel, and spoke similarly to them. And the men of Peniel answered him just as the men of Succoth had answered. So he spoke also to the men of Peniel, saying, "When I return safely, I will tear down this tower." Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to see that he does a lot more than tear down a tower. In verses 10 and following, now Zebah and Zalmunna were in Karkor, and their armies with them about 15,000 men, all who were left out of the 135,000 that the Midianites had had on hand. And we get that total, as we keep referring to that total, by they had 15,000 men, and all who were left of the entire army of the sons of the east, for the fallen were 120,000 swordsmen. So the 120 and the 15 gives us the 135 we've talked about. Gideon went up by the way of those who lived in tents on the east of Nobah and Jogba, and attacked the camp when the camp was unsuspecting. When Zebah and Zalmunna fled, he pursued them and captured the two kings of Midian, Zebah and Zalmunna, and routed the whole army. Verse 10 tells us that the two kings and their 15,000 surviving men out of the original total fled to Karkor. The location, the exact location, is not known, but one writer suggests it's far to the southeast in modern Ammon or Jordan, and another says it's about 100 miles east of the Dead Sea. So they've made some distance away from the battlefield, is my takeaway. In verse 11, Gideon pursues those two kings and the Midianite army, what's left of it, and is again successful in holding a surprise attack. Now, while the two kings fled, Gideon followed, and he captures them. The Israelites finished by defeating the Midianite army. I don't think the Midianite army at that moment was going to be prepared to do any more, because as we end this chapter, they're going to have 40 years of rest. The last time that we hear that they have 40 years of rest, by the way. So in verse 13, then Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from the battle by the ascent of Heres, and he captured a youth from Succoth and questioned him. Then the youth wrote down for him the princes of Succoth and his elders, 77 men. He came to the men of Succoth and said, "Behold, Zebah and Zalmunna, concerning whom you taunted me, saying, 'Are the hands of Zebah and Zalmunna already in your hand, that we should give bread to your men who are weary?' He took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and he disciplined the men of Succoth with them. He tore down the tower of Peniel," remember he said he'd do that, "and killed the men of the city." As we look at this passage, they defeated the Midianites. Verses 13 and 14 says he captured a youth, interrogated him about the leaders of Succoth. And in verses 15 and 16, Gideon shows he's a man of his word and displays the two kings before those two leaders of Succoth, 77 leaders of Succoth, who had taunted him. And then he harshly disciplines those men with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. Now, I know that many of us know what a rose bush is and the briars, thorns on that. Or if you've gone blackberry picking, you understand what getting pricked by a thorn would be like. Can you imagine what it would have been like to be beaten by the thorns of the wilderness and briars? And then it says he tore down the tower of Peniel and killed the men of the city. Now, why the men of Peniel were killed, we don't know. God doesn't tell us. Both towns had failed to come to the aid of their fellow Israelites at a crucial time, and both towns paid the price for their failure. What would you like to say through 17? Pax.
Couple of things about possibilities of why he followed through with it the way he did. You know, when you
good thoughts, especially the application to the rest of the nation. In verse 18 to 21, then he said to Ziba and Zalmunna, "What kind of men were they whom you killed at Tabor?" And they said, "They were like you, each one resembling the son of a king." He said, "They were my brothers, the sons of my mother. As the Lord lives, if only you had let them live, I would not kill you." So he said to Jether, his firstborn, "Rise, kill them." But the youth did not draw the sword, for he was afraid, because he was still a youth. Then Ziba and Zalmunna said, "Rise up yourself and fall on us, for as the man, so is his strength." So Gideon arose and killed Ziba and Zalmunna and took the crescent ornaments which were on their camels' necks. Now it appears that Gideon is going to speak to his son in just a moment. So maybe they are back in the area of Orpha, having returned from the fight, traveled back home, crossed the Jordan River over to the west side and back up north to where Gideon was from. That's one thought for you about having the son there. And he's confronting these two kings about their crimes against the Israelites. He asks about the men killed at Tabor, which that's about 5 miles north of Moreh, which is the mountain where the Midianites had camped. And I don't know that we read a lot about that any place except here. And in response to Gideon's question, they answer in a very complimentary manner, saying to Gideon, "They were like you, each one resembling the son of a king." You know, so if you got harsh times and potential death in front of you, might as well play nice, I guess. What they didn't know, he's about to reveal. In verse 19, Gideon says, "Those good-looking men are my brothers, the sons of my mother." He then says, if they had not killed his family members, his brothers, he'd let them live. So instead, in verse 20, he asks his young son to kill these two men. And the young son is a lot like his dad was back in chapter 6. He's hesitant. He's young. He's afraid. And refuses to kill him. So in verse 21, we see that Gideon arose and killed Ziba and Zalmunna, and then took the crescent ornaments which were on their camels' necks. I suppose those crescent ornaments were a lot like trophies, having defeated these two enemies. So we have seen four kings now defeated. We've seen 120,000 men defeated at the actual battle site. And then we've seen Gideon pursue the remainder of the army, and they defeat the rest. And now he's killed two more kings. Before we read again, any comment? So let's read through the end of the chapter, and then we'll come back to verse 22. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us." Pax referred to that a moment ago. "Rule over us, both you and your son, also your son's son, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." But Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." Yet Gideon said to them, "I would request of each of you that each of you give me an earring from his spoil." for they had gold earrings because they were Ishmaelites. They said, "We will surely give them." So they spread out a garment, and every one of them threw an earring there from his foal. The weight of the gold earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crescent ornaments and pendants and the purple robes which were on the kings of Midian, and besides the neck bands that were on their camels' necks. Gideon made it into an ephod and placed it in his city Ophrah, and all Israel played the harlot with it there, so that it became a snare to Gideon and his household. Verse 28, so Midian was subdued before the sons of Israel, and they did not lift up their heads anymore. And the land was undisturbed for 40 years in the days of Gideon. Then Jerubbabel, the son of Joash, went and lived in his own house. That's Gideon. Now Gideon had 70 sons who were his direct descendants, for he had many wives. His concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, and he named him Abimelech. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a ripe old age and was buried in the tomb of his father Joash in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Then it came about as soon as Gideon was dead that the sons of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-berith their god. Thus the sons of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side. Nor did they show kindness to the house of Jerubbabel, that is Gideon, in accord with all the good that he had done to Israel. And so ends our story of Gideon. So let's go back to verses 22 through 26. The men of Israel are very grateful at this point for Gideon's leadership and want to make him a ruler. Though they don't use the word king here, the idea, when they mention his descendants, Gideon implies that kingship seems to be what they're offering Gideon. But Gideon declines and says, God will rule over Israel. Gideon asks, however, that instead of making him a king, that the troops give him an earring from the spoil that they've taken from their corpses of the defeated Midianites. Verse 26 says the weight of gold came to 1,700 shekels. One writer estimates that that total is about 43 pounds. With everything else he had gathered from the defeated kings, Gideon, by any measure, was now a wealthy man. Verse 27 is extremely sad because it says Gideon made a gold ephod out of the shekels, and that all Israel prostituted themselves by falling into idolatry as they worshiped the gold ephod. Now, an ephod was the upper garment worn by the high priest at the tabernacle. The one described in Exodus 28 and 39 was very ornate and costly. Well, let me stop there. Any comments through verse 27? Pax?
Later, in the next few verses, it says after he died that they went back to the Baals and back to the other idols.
Good thought. I just don't know how that would play out with the people, but it obviously led to them down the primrose path toward more sin. Verse 28, so Midian was subdued before the sons of Israel, and they did not lift up their heads anymore, and the land was undisturbed for 40 years. This is the last time, as I said a moment ago, in the book of Judges that this statement is true. Verse 29, then Zerubbabel, the son of Joash, went and lived in his own house. Tells us Gideon went home, lived a long life, and as you can see in these verses, had 70 sons. He had a lot of children, a lot of wives, and that may have been an indication of what he did with some of that wealth to support a large family like that. Verse 31 says that Gideon had a concubine who was in Shechem who bore him a son. He named him Abimelech. And in Deuteronomy 7:3, it said, you shouldn't marry the people of the land. It says, furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. Also, while he refused to be a king, according to the earlier verse, he names his son Abimelech, which a couple of the commentators say can be translated, my father is king. So, Pax, you may be down right on the spot of what he was doing, of setting himself up as a pretty important person. Then in verses 33 to 35, it tells us that the vicious cycle of falling back into sin overtakes Israel. The pattern of being at peace, sinning, being punished, repenting, being delivered, is now continuing, as we see with the death of Gideon, that the sons of Israel, verse 34, did not remember the Lord their God who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side, nor did they show kindness to the household of Gideon. The people didn't remember the lessons they had been taught, did they? You know, there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from Gideon. If only he had remained faithful, what would the people have done? If only Israel had not followed Gideon, what would have been the implication? What would our lives be like if only we hadn't sinned, we were older, younger, single, married, had more education, had a different job, were retired, whatever our circumstances. Regardless of where we find ourselves, the bottom line for me is we have to turn to God, follow God with faithfulness, and here we see that the sons of Israel did not remember the Lord their God. What would you like to say? Time's up for class. Thank you for your attention and participation.